Hello, and welcome to a special spooky Halloween edition of What is Wrong with Hiring, the podcast where we talk about why hiring people and getting hired are both absolute nightmares. I'm Laura Klein, a once and future hiring manager and currently extremely annoyed job seeker.
And I'm Amy Santee, a once and never again tech worker turned career coach who, instead of experiencing my own direct hiring horrors, gets to live vicariously through all of you.
Please be advised that this podcast may contain drinking, swearing, and screaming into the abyss, so pretty much like most podcasts.
Yes, this is our third and final episode of our Horror Stories mini-series for October. We ask listeners to share their worst experiences within the shadowy realm of interviewing and hiring, so thank you once again to everyone who submitted a story. Not only do these stories make for great podcast content and provide us with a reason to curse and groan more than usual, but hopefully it lets people know that they are not alone in this messed up world of job seeking and hiring, which really only seems to be getting worse.
It's got to get better, right? It's going to get better. I can feel it. Things are going to change, Amy.
You can have hope if you don't have optimism, right? I think those are different. I feel hopeful, but I don't know if I'm so optimistic, just given humanity in general.
Yeah, you make a great point. All right, I hate it when you do that. All right, let's jump right into our stories. These are stories from hiring managers this time, just so that y'all know it's not just the candidates. Sometimes those of us on the other end are having our own troubles. So here we go. We were hiring for a lead UX position. We were down to our last two candidates, both awesome, and finally made the offer to one who had slightly more related industry experience. The candidate requested time to think about it as he had other opportunities in progress, fair enough, except that he requested 6 weeks. My company offered him 10 days to make a decision, still a very long time, but eventually he accepted the offer and we turned down the other candidate. Fast forward nearly 6 weeks to the day of when he'd asked for it, and of course here comes his 2 weeks notice. He'd accepted another opportunity. Now come the shenanigans. Here's what happened over the course of the next 5 weeks. The company went back to the other candidate that they'd already turned down and asked if they wanted the job after all. Except the company changed it to a junior level designer, part-time and no benefits, way below this person's qualifications, and definitely not what we needed. I should have seen this for the 800 red flags that it was, but instead I went to leadership to make the case that we didn't need another junior designer. We needed someone to chart a path and establish a practice. They agreed to change the position back, but I now wish that they hadn't. The company returned to the candidate and offered them the lead UX position, as it had originally been advertised, and a day later my company decided they didn't actually have the funding for this position. Maybe they would soon? They asked the candidate, who they had offered the lead position to yesterday, if they could wait 3 weeks to learn whether or not they might have a job with us. The company's financial situation only got worse, and the company ended up laying off 40 to 50 people over the next month. As far as I know, they never let that candidate know that they didn't have a job with us. To this day, I feel terrible I was part of a company that jerked someone around like this. This is a person's life that we're messing with, and all because of utter incompetence and mismanagement on our side. Nothing to do with Canada at all, who was literally so awesome.
That's quite the clusterfuck there.
That's if you look up clusterfuck in the dictionary, it's just this story. That's mm-hmm. So many people did shitty things here. It's real bad. And the guy who requested 6 weeks, I get it. We've all wanted to do that because we want to keep our options open and we've got that thing that's coming up. And sometimes like things have really long lead times, but it sucks. You have to understand that there are people on the other end making decisions. Now, as it turns out, the people on the other end making those decisions were also terrible. Not this one person who wrote in, but the people who were like, yes, we have the funding. No, we don't have the funding. Wait, why did they have the funding to hire this guy, but not the other? Like, how did this all go down in the course of 3 months?
Yeah, I think this is also a good example of why it's important to have empathy for hiring managers and recruiters who really are doing their best to hire someone, to interview the best candidates, while they're having to also deal with incompetent management and business practices. And that's going to be a running theme through the rest of the episode today. I definitely see, just over the course of my work and even my own career, a lot of candidates get jerked around in the interview process. They're made to wait for long periods of time for news and updates and feedback and offers, right? Rescinding offers seems to be more commonplace these days, and all kinds of other shenanigans, as this listener said. And none of that is fair, but what strikes me is that companies hold job seekers to different standards than businesses seem to think is okay for themselves.
Yeah, it does suck when companies are, you know, saying, oh, we can't let you have 6 weeks to make a decision, but then they turn around and they do this bullshit to the other candidate, you know, where it's 3 weeks, maybe, yes, no, I don't know. And then just never tell the person whether or not they have a job. I wish the best for that other person. I really hope they got the other job or another job that, you know, just offered it to them and then let them come to work. That would be delightful. Are you ready with our next story?
Yes, ready. I was working in New York City and hiring for a second user researcher. I was the first one. The recruiter decided that she could decide on her own, without any researcher talking with her, who was worth putting up in a hotel and flying across the country for a full day of interviews. She gives the green light to bring a UXR candidate out. This candidate had virtually no qualitative research experience whatsoever and was more of a quant analyst. Of course, she was completely unqualified. It was a waste of a day for every hiring manager. But it would have been even more unprofessional on our end to fly someone cross country and then dump them after the first interview of the morning. Bonkers company.
You know, if I'm always saying that like good recruiters and like good recruiting partners can make a really big impact. I don't know if I've said that a lot to you, but I do say it a lot in my everyday life, especially when I'm working with a terrible one, because terrible ones can make an even bigger impact and not in a good way. The thing that upsets me even more here is I'm curious as to what system this recruiter was working in that they imagined that this was appropriate. Had they made these decisions before? I have never worked with a recruiter who would even think about flying somebody cross country for a full day of interviews without at least, I don't know, a conversation or a hiring manager interview. Like one hiring manager call, half an hour, would have made it clear that this was not the right candidate and you could have moved on.
Exactly. I'm curious about several things because this was clearly a very broken hiring process all around. So I wonder, how were these folks communicating? Were they working in any kind of applicant tracking software where they could see the same information? What was the process for reviewing resumes? Did the recruiter do it and have a screener and then the hiring manager? And at what point did this person make this decision to bring this person out? I wonder if this recruiter, because I hate to think that there's a recruiter like this out there who is just is this way and does this sort of thing all the time. So I wonder, was it a repeated pattern from this recruiter? And if so, why wasn't it brought up, or why wasn't it brought to other people's attention if it had caused problems? Was there some kind of relationship issue between this recruiter and the hiring manager? I also wonder if this person could have maybe gotten someone to intervene, like a director or some other decision maker. So who knows? Again, very broken hiring process all around. And I do think the hiring manager knows best what they are looking for, and that a partnership and mutual understanding between that person and a recruiter is definitely ideal.
Yeah. And a great warning, especially to new folks who I know we don't get a lot of training in how to hire and what the process is and all of that, but really good reminder if you're a brand new to hiring manager and you got to hire your first person, or if you're just working with a new recruiter or a new TA, anybody in that space, have that conversation with them ahead of time before you even send them over the job rec. Just, hey, here's our process. This is what we want to go through. What do you normally do? Okay, fantastic. This is how we do it. Because I wouldn't have hired, I wouldn't have organized a remote loop without that first manager call, much less, you know, flying somebody cross country.
Yeah, exactly. This reminds me of something I heard about from someone once, which was that when they were a hiring manager at a company for UX research, I think they had a fairly small team of maybe two or three researchers under them, and they wanted to hire someone else. And I was talking about applicant tracking systems and reviewing resumes and how to make that process more efficient. And they said that they were having to spend hours and hours reviewing hundreds of resumes. And I thought, that's really not necessary. So what could be fixed in that process so that the recruiter can do the initial screening and the hiring manager can look at a smaller number of resumes? And they even had a similar experience where the recruiter was making more of those decisions around qualified applicants and not really consulting with that hiring manager. Didn't sound quite as bad as this, where they made big decisions about who to bring out. But yeah, maybe this is more common than I realize.
I have actually asked in the past under certain circumstances to see all the resumes because I didn't know that I wanted, often for the first time we went through them, I wanted to be the one to go through quickly and at least say, send me more like this, don't send me any like this. And just to make sure that we weren't screening out anybody who might have a non-traditional resume that I might recognize as somebody who might do really well at the job, but wasn't somebody that I could explain to a recruiter. Generally, once I had a good rapport with the person, I would let them go through and do it. So it depends. This is why they're your partner. This is that what being a partner means, and having somebody that you can work with repeatedly is fantastic. All right, on to our next horror story. When I was a new manager, I had headcount to fill one position. I posted a content strategy role to oversee the SEO strategy of a major travel e-commerce website. I got through the interview process and made a verbal offer to a great candidate. Then the chief commercial officer decided that he would approve all new hires. Fine, I coached my candidate on what to expect. The interview went okay, except being basically impossible to schedule. And the CCO came back and said, no new hires, we'll just, quote, do less content. The last straw for me was I had a contractor who had been with the team for 7 years. I'd been trying to convert her to a permanent employee and was told by my director that we didn't have a business case for it, despite having had consistently enough work for 7 years. I quit the next day.
I think that was a good call.
Yeah. I think that was the appropriate response. That I really get tired of companies that decide halfway through the process to completely change things. And I get it. Occasionally it happens. An economic downturn, sudden change in finances, new management. But man, like, just get your shit together. Once you've approved a rate and everything, having that all change it for the next one, right? Don't change it retroactively. It just sucks. These are people's lives.
Yeah, it goes back to a couple stories ago where we were talking about the difference between businesses jerking people around, taking forever, changing their mind at the last minute, and then candidates who are trying to find gainful employment at a place that's decent enough and hopefully not toxic with swoop and poop decision makers, as in this example. And if they decide that they want something else, it's like a personal offense.
You know what? Take the time that you need as a candidate, because they are not going to return you any favors.
No. And when I work with people who get multiple offers, or they accept something and then another offer comes in a few weeks later, that's just like way more money or more aligned with what they want to do. There's a lot of internal turmoil that happens because people feel bad about changing their minds. And it is a business relationship first and foremost, but individuals still feel like it is also a personal relationship. But I encourage people to make the decisions that they want to make based on what feels good. But I also try to get them to think about the fact that this decision should ultimately be to benefit themselves and their careers. Yep. But yeah, the running theme here of incompetence in business and product strategy and planning and not really having a good rationale for staffing decisions, all of these things get in the way of getting the work done.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to our next horror story. This one really made me feel not so happy inside, Amy.
Indeed. I was on the hiring committee for a role on my team where we had two excellent candidates in the final round, a man and a woman. The man showed a lot of promise, and during the process, we learned he went to the same church as the hiring manager. When Googling the candidates, I found a social media post of his that was disparaging Muslims. I raised a concern about this with the hiring manager, and he brushed it off and kept him in the running. The final round was a project that the candidates would present on-site on separate days. The female candidate did an excellent project, but was very nervous while presenting. I had no concerns about her candidacy. The male candidate did not read the instructions and went rogue, presenting a project that was completely off base and of poor quality. Despite this, the hiring manager held a meeting with the hiring committee under the guise of getting alignment on the decision, where instead he spent upwards of an hour not so subtly trying to get permission to give the male candidate a do-over. He did not succeed, woohoo, and we ended up hiring the female candidate, but it was very clear he would have preferred the male candidate before the project day even happened.
Sure. So, okay, I think the most frustrating thing here for me, and there are a lot of them, if the woman hadn't gotten that job, I guarantee you she would have assumed that it was because she was nervous while presenting and that the person who got it was just clearly better. This is a thing. You go in and I hear so many candidates who do this and afterwards they're like, oh, what could I have done better? How could I have made them like me? What did I screw up? What was I? And just be like, oh, I was shaky or I was sweaty or whatever the hell it is, right? I didn't do this thing perfectly. And that's why I very rightly didn't get the job. And it's never, oh no, they just had a pre-existing relationship with some dude who's, I mean, if he's going to go rogue during the hiring process and needs a fucking do-over, what's he going to be like as an employee? All I can say is the only thing that makes me happy about this is that there was a person, the writer here, who cared enough about the correct outcome to shut that shit down. All of it, like the ignoring the fact that this person is a racist, the fact that you are just giving extra tries to some dude because, you know, oh, but we have this thing in common. Oh.
And I wonder, this guy who was trying to get his buddy the job, of course, that would be nice to get someone you know a job, but that person really didn't have a conscience, right? It was a very obvious bias and all too common, of course. I really appreciate the person who submitted this story for having the integrity to several things. First of all, hiring the person who was clearly the best candidate and looking past the interview nervousness to her actual skills and experience. Because like you were saying, so many people, when they get a rejection, they pick apart every possible thing that could have gone wrong. And that also puts a lot of pressure on people to prepare or over-prepare and to try and perform in a perfect way, basically. So yeah, being nervous during an interview is common and it's not really a good reason to put someone out of the running. And also calling out these problematic behaviors like this guy's Islamophobia and trying to get ahead of the other person's bias towards their acquaintance. I think these are all really clear examples of why diversity in hiring is still such an issue.
Yeah, absolutely. It can be hard to be the one to stand up and say, yeah, I'm not actually comfortable working with somebody who might make other people that he's working with really uncomfortable. And yeah, good for you.
Yeah, that can be a risky move to do something like that.
Yeah. All right, on to our next story.
I was hiring for a senior role, a designer who would be working independently with some of our ventures overseas. I was a new manager, and this was probably my third or fourth hire ever. I interviewed a guy who would have been a great fit on paper, but I felt he was a bit too full of himself. I told the recruiter to reject him and tell him that we didn't think he'd be the right culture fit and gave a few examples. Once the guy got the message, he reached out to me directly on Skype, this was over 10 years ago, and told me how he looked me up on LinkedIn, how inexperienced I was compared to him, and what a bad decision I've made by not hiring him. I was shocked and shaking. It was a rude and disrespectful message, but the young, female, inexperienced manager that I was, I immediately started to question myself and my decision. Fortunately, my manager was super supportive and helped me understand that this was not my issue at all, so I replied to the guy, "Thanks for reaching out. This message is exactly the reason why I did not consider you for the role," before blocking him.
Yes.
This one makes me feel better.
Oh, yes.
I'm going to file this one under lucky escape from this dude. Isn't it great when we make a decision and we're like, oh man, was that the right decision? I don't know. And then to just have something happen that just makes it suddenly very clear, oh, you were not just right. You were like extra super right. Like your vibes on this guy were just spot on.
Exactly. And note that, again, just like other stories we've shared, the initial reaction that she had is like questioning herself and did I make the right decision? That is the impact of these kinds of messages towards women and towards people of color, like to instill in you that it must be something wrong with you or that you are less experienced or you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, it's kudos for this person too for actually giving the person examples of why he wouldn't be a good culture fit in the first place. Hopefully those were constructive and reasonable. And what he could have done was responded with, thank you for the feedback and learned something from it and moved on and done better next time. But he didn't. Instead, he was an entitled asshole who just decided that he would say, look, I get it. I am also an entitled asshole. I get it. There is a place to say, what is this idiot doing? I am wildly more experienced than they are. How could they possibly turn down somebody as marvelous as myself? The place to say that is in the group chat with your supportive friends or at the bar. Like, the place to say this is not to the person you say, thank you so much for the feedback. I really appreciate it and wish you the best of luck. That's, be a professional.
And obviously this person really lacked self-awareness to, first of all, know what they don't know, potentially, or to think about how their message would affect someone else. I think it was probably also an immediate reaction. You open up an email, it's an awful email, you want to write a response right away, it's full of anger and frustration, and you send it, and that's never a good idea. So I imagine there was something going on like that, where of course he didn't appreciate the rejection that he got. Personal growth is really important. We all have things to work on, and we have to do that. And hopefully this taught him something. And I don't know, maybe he did tell his support group or friends, and they were like, dude, you just got to face it. This is how you are. And who knows? Now he's on a journey to self-improvement and totally self-aware.
I thought you said you weren't optimistic. I fully expect that this dude learned absolutely nothing and never will.
Every now and then, I think there's a dude that does learn from these sorts of things.
Oh, sure. Oh, there's absolutely. People of all genders learn all the time. I just don't feel good about this particular guy. I don't know why. I got that feeling. All right. We're going to move on to our next one. Again, this is not a thing that I expected to have to say, but we're going to issue another content warning. This one involves some gun violence. I want to reassure everybody, nobody actually gets physically harmed in this scenario. But if guns or anything like that are a sensitive topic for you, please skip forward a few minutes so that you miss it. We don't want to upset folks, but we really did want to include this story because it's a doozy.
I was the manager and a partner team had someone interviewing my candidate. The candidate came out sobbing from the interview and I asked what happened. She said that the interviewer put her under so much stress that she needed to leave. She left and then I asked the interviewer what question they used. The interviewer had posed a question about Russian roulette probability. It turns out they asked the candidate the following. If you had a gun to your own head, what is the likelihood that you would die if you pulled the trigger? After one successive pull of the trigger and not getting shot, what would be the likelihood you would die? He continued like this for a few minutes. Yikes.
Yeah, yikes indeed. All I have to say is, if you're ever interviewing somebody and they start crying, you're doing it wrong. And maybe you should see that ahead of time. And also, if you're looking for an example of something with a 1 in 6 probability, I don't know, dice are right there. There are just other options. You go with drawing straws, all sorts of things that do not involve death or gun violence that might have affected a human being's actual life in the past or might be traumatic. I just don't, come on, just be like the slightest bit aware of other humans.
But also, wouldn't you need to know, like, how guns work or what Russian roulette even is or how many bullets go in a gun. I don't even, this question sucks.
It's a terrible question. And like I said, really way more people know about dice. And even if they don't, like I said, there are lots of ways to present that question that are just not that. Anyway, let's move on to something a little less violent. It was 3 years ago, and I was hiring a quantitative UX researcher for my team. I interviewed a candidate that everyone loved, and his credentials were amazing. He had a PhD in neuropsychology. Long story short, the candidate considered it was his duty to lecture the research participants on what they were doing wrong from the NP perspective while he was conducting research. Huge red flag for the position, and I had to let him go.
Jeez. Come on. Honestly, to me, again, lack of self-awareness, but also lack of an understanding of perhaps practicing research in a business setting and what is user research and the point of it. And yeah, it just sounds very like a very pompous person.
Yeah. The funny thing for me is I'm often complaining about terrible exercises given during interviews, right? Again, hate design exercises that you have to take home and do in 8 hours. I think they're dumb. But this is a really good example of when doing a good, applicable exercise during the interview process might have surfaced this issue. It sounds like they actually hired the guy and then had to fire him. And I'm not blaming anybody for this. I think it's really easy to make a bad hire, especially when they look so good on paper. And like, oh, he's got a PhD. It's so fantastic. But then sometimes running that exercise where you actually have them do a sample and you can observe them doing the work that they would really be doing, something like that is really applicable and can help you make a better decision. Sometimes you can suss out whether they're going to do something really, he understands all about neuropsych. What he doesn't understand about is how to actually interview humans, which is absolutely a thing that could happen.
And one thing I noticed here is if this person was a quant researcher, typically that means you're not really directly interacting with research participants.
That's a great point. Maybe this person should never have been in the position where they were interviewing people. But yeah, that might have just been a mismatch. But there are definitely quant qual researchers that, that do both.
True. Yeah, I totally agree. And we've talked previously about what is the best way to assess a person's qualifications beyond the resume, beyond talking with them and asking them about examples, and what is appropriate in terms of giving people things to do asynchronously on their own to prepare and bring back, or the benefits of sitting down and whiteboarding and having a conversation and just seeing how they interact with you and how they would approach doing this work. I think that's a great idea. As a hiring manager over the years, I remember three separate instances of extreme arrogance. Number one, I greeted a design candidate at the front desk. It was winter, but he was wearing a t-shirt and had absolutely nothing in his hand, not even a laptop to show his work. He looked like he just went outside to take his garbage out. Later in the interview, he proceeded to speak poorly about his current employer, saying he didn't know what he was doing with the business and that he was the only, quote, adult in the room, giving vivid examples of how he had to manage everybody. Number two, the level of arrogance was similar, but this time I was interviewing a fairly young-looking guy for an entry-level manager role. He was acting like he knew everything and thought management is all about him being right all the time. Very toxic guy. And number three, I was interviewing a guy for a manager role, and as I was asking him probing questions when he stopped me mid-sentence and said, "You know, you were really good at this," my jaw just dropped.
Okay. The funny thing is that some of these things I absolutely think could be done in a way that would not come across as terribly arrogant, but maybe that's because I'm incredibly arrogant and often come across that way. But sometimes this stuff is true, right? Sometimes you are the only adult in the room. We've actually read stories here that I think the person who's writing in kind of sounds like the only adult in the room who's saying, "Oh, maybe this isn't such a good idea." The thing is, when you are a candidate, you have to have a way of explaining that without explaining that, right? You have to have a way to get it to come across where this was a thing that I did. in response to some of these other things that happened. And sometimes passive voice is a good thing here. It's on your side that, oh, somebody may have made a bad decision here and this was how we addressed it. And it's actually going to make you look more like the adult in the room if you don't come in and try to act like you know absolutely everything and you're always right. The funniest one to me, though, is that you're really good at this. Because again, a way to say that doesn't come across as weird, but if you stop somebody in mid-sentence and compliment them on something that they are literally hired to do, the only appropriate response from the interviewer is to say, yeah, I know. That's why they hired me to do it. It's a weird move. It's a weird move.
Yeah. And if I were in that person's seat, I don't know. It depends on what mood I'm in, but maybe I would say something like that. Or maybe I would revert back into what society expects, which is, oh, thank you. That's the easiest response to provide. And it doesn't make it even more awkward than it already is. Just this, again, lack of self-awareness. And I have coached a lot of people on this same situation where perhaps you did have a toxic work environment, an abusive boss, like racism, sexism, like all of these horrible things that are not uncommon in workplaces. And the discussion I like to have is think about how to best approach it. And sometimes it's not worth sharing certain things. You can live your own truth and know that something happened, but you also have to prepare a story or a response that doesn't make you look bad, even though what happened to you was bad. So thinking about how to share that kind of information and go, what do I really need to share in this moment? And honestly, it's okay to lie, because sometimes we quit really crappy work environments. And if we were to sit there and tell the reasons, it might just make us look like the bad guy here. And so I think it's okay to just make something up and make it easier on yourself to get through that question.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, next story. Some candidates lack self-awareness during the interview and the nerves get the best of them. I was doing a phone screen with a design candidate. After my brief introduction, I asked her my first question. She was a fast talker and went on a long-winded answer that lasted 20 minutes. She repeated her answer backwards and summarized it yet again for the third time before I just had to brutally cut her off. I tried earlier, but she didn't hear me trying to cut her off. I literally had to yell, "Please stop." It was a 30-minute screen call and I had a dilemma. Only 10 minutes left and so many more questions unanswered. I asked her to be brief and went with my second question. The same thing happened. This was a river of words, monotonous staccato of pretty much the same story from question one. Not only did she talk for a long time, but ended the second question repeating what she said in the first. There was 1 minute left in the meeting, and I did not ask the third question. The candidate was referred to me by a colleague who assured me she was great, but very nervous during the call. Unfortunately, we did have to end the conversations there. I just want to say, Amy, look, if you're going to talk about me, just fucking call me out by name, because nobody is a bigger rambler than I am. And I get it. And I am working on it. And I'm sorry, but it's going to happen. Don't assume it's nerves. Sometimes some of us just like hearing ourselves talk.
Yeah, I feel bad for this candidate who knows what was going on in their head. And unlike the previous story we told where the hiring manager realize that a person's nervousness doesn't reflect on their skills or qualifications. I don't know. There's just something about this one and the fact that they also weren't paying enough attention and were perhaps just stuck in their own head. So they didn't hear the person interviewing them ask them to take a pause. So yeah, I don't know. It sounds like that person needs to do some practice. What would you do in this kind of situation as someone who's been a hiring manager?
As the hiring manager, I would have tried to cut her off sooner, but it's tough because it's very hard to assess what the person actually knows if they're not responding to your questions. Mm-hmm. I might suggest to the person who had referred her, okay, great. Why don't y'all do a little bit of practice? I might have been willing to talk to her again just because I don't like to penalize people for being real nervous, but also, I'd be very careful if this were the kind of job where she'd have to answer questions and speak off the cuff. If it's not that kind of job, I'm willing to let that slide. But if she's going to have to do this in day to day, that's a real good indication that maybe it's not the job for her.
Yeah. And I like what you said about coaching someone in interview prep. It could be this person's coworker, or maybe if you don't decide to hire that person, providing feedback on that in a coach-like manner. I've definitely heard of people doing that just to help that person better prepare for their next interview.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to move on to the next one. This one actually makes me quite happy. I think this one's fun. It's the opposite of what we just heard.
It happened years ago, early in my management career. I was phone screening a female candidate who happened to have a very pleasant, soothing voice. She was giving me a response, and while she was telling her scenario with such a soothing voice, I was almost hypnotized. Maybe actually hypnotized. When she finished, I couldn't snap out of it fast enough. I fumbled through the rest of the interview. Lesson for me, I always prepare a detailed script for all of my interviews and try not to improvise.
I love this, and I feel like I would hire this person just because they'd be so soothing to have on the team. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Just, okay, your job is going to be emotional support person, and I'm going to get ranty and weird, and your whole job is just to hypnotize me and get me to calm the fuck down. I think this would be fantastic. Although I do think that she's wasting her life if she's not going and like just making money doing voiceovers for Calm or Headspace or some other meditation app, or like doing ASMR videos on YouTube, mm-hmm. right? I think this person has a great future ahead of her as just, you know, very soothing voice person.
Yes. Should I do a nice soothing voice for the rest of the podcast?
That would be delightful. I will take a nap for the rest of it. Anyway, I think this is fantastic. Great takeaway here though, of just in case the person starts to hypnotize you, have a list of questions you want to ask. Never bad advice.
All right. We have one more story.
I was one of a few interviewers, but not in charge of the process. One, they insisted on asking the candidates for their salary expectations, a decision supported by HR, in case a candidate would accept less than we were offering. I expressed my objection repeatedly and was overruled. Two, they even planned to ask salary expectations during the interview with me present until I explained that salary conversations should not happen with me, a potential future colleague, there. Three, they decided to make the shortlisting easier for us by requiring candidates to submit a video introduction of themselves so we could get a feel for them. We lost three good candidates at this stage because who wants to record a video introduction? Four, there was no set interview process or sequence of interviews. When I asked about the process and number of interviews, I was told we would make it up as we go, depending on the candidate, with a complete disregard for evaluating everyone evenly. Five, my manager joked during the process that we should add a project to candidates to get some help doing work for free. Six, once we hired someone, they were invited to a team call to meet the team before their start date. All of these just seemed like total no-brainers of what not to do in hiring and made me feel embarrassed during the entire process. Ugh.
I wonder, do you think this was a startup?
Yes. Yeah, I don't think any company beyond 30 people can get away with, no, we'll just wing it. Maybe they can. If they can, fuck them. This is bad. And do you remember what we were saying earlier about sometimes you are the only adult in the room, and mm-hmm. this person was clearly the only adult in the room, and Jesus, this is good for this writer for trying to make it a better process, but wow, what was the hiring process like when they got hired?
Right. Oh, no, this is too much to deal with. And again, it's like, how much impact can you actually have on the hiring process as a manager? It's nice when you're able to design what that looks like with different collaborators, get input from different people, actually put something in place that assesses people in an equal way to know which types of questions and conversations should happen at which point and with whom, right? These are all pretty, I don't know, straightforward, fairly obvious things. But again, different organizations have, I don't know, different levels of clusterfuckery going on that can have an impact.
Game over. That is all the time that we have for today. And frankly, I can't take any more horror. We hope you haven't been too frightened by the awfulness of these ghastly anecdotes.
Yes. And if you are scared, you can thank us for giving you a taste of all the horrors you will encounter in your next job search or hiring process. Or maybe not. Maybe people listening to this will do things differently. We can only hope. So thank you again for all of the people who submitted stories. And you really have, I think, made other people feel a little less alone in all of this.
I'm Laura.
And I'm Amy.
And we want to thank you all for listening and wish you all the best of luck with your search. No matter what you're looking for, we're rooting for you.